AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're here every Monday through Friday, and we're here 24/7. American Family Radio is. I'm talking about this show, today's issues here on American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman. Yes, we are related. And Steve Jordahl is here with us this half hour, as he normally does. Good morning, Steve Jordahl.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm well. It's a good day.
It is a good day.
Yeah.
Canada is going to be sharing with the United States, yes, a healthy dose of Arctic Blast.
They're good neighbors, aren't they?
Going to be sending that down our way. When is that going to happen, Steve?
It's going to happen this weekend, and in fact, it might have a pretty good chance of affecting the playoff game between Kansas City and New England. It might be the coldest start ever at Arrowhead Stadium. Well below zero, it could hit at kickoff
time. In Kansas City.
Yeah. Do you think they'll have those guys that, without the shirts that have the, you know, Chiefs written out on their chests?
Well, there's a lot of alcohol there.
Yeah.
In Kansas City.
Keep them warm. Keep the blood flowing.
Well, they think they're warm. and I guess they can.
They don't know any better.
They don't know any better till, you know, they get frostbite. But
I heard for Christians, sometimes barbecue does the same, has the same effect.
It makes them think that they're warm.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is it is supposed to be about zero at game time, right?
For anywhere from zero to well below, they say.
Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the New England Patriots, they've played in cold weather. I don't know how many of their players have done so, because players change on teams every year.
Sure.
But I know Tom Brady, you know, has played in that kind of weather.
He made his name in that kind of weather against my Raiders. Remember the Tuck Rule game? That was all in snow.
Yeah, so he's played. You know, a lot of people say, a team from the north can play, adapt better, or from the Midwest, than a team from the South or the West Coast, for example, in cold weather. And that's not necessarily true with professional football, because the players on a given football NFL team are from all over the country.
Right.
You know, the New England Patriots are from players from colleges all over America. So they're not necessarily just from cold weather states. So,
By the time you get to December and January, they probably have a better chance of having recently competed in cold weather than someone like the Florida,
Miami Dolphins. Excuse me for interrupting.
No. Go ahead.
Some of these fields, like the Kansas City field, it's heated underneath.
Yeah.
So they it's not the frozen tundra like it was back in the 60s, you know, when you saw the old Cowboys and Packers, you know, Lombardi versus Landry in the – in the day, so they do heat the fields, and it makes it at least better. But still, throwing a ball with 0 degrees,
that's some amazing technology going on.
It also helps if you're able to practice in it. Yeah. So you may not be from that area. Maybe you went to college on the West Coast, you know, in California. But if you're able to practice in the weather, at least the week of,
I would say for the Christians, though, you better be in church on Sunday. What time's the game start?
I don't know if this is an after. Well, I can tell you, actually, if this is an after.
I mean, what game? I'm just thinking your pastor would say, so you couldn't make it to church, but you could sit out in 0 degree.
Valid.
Is there a dispensation if it's your team in your town that you can go to a Saturday night service?
Surely there's
got to
be some forgiveness.
I think, you know, I'm not going to judge that.
In the day of TiVo, this is the late afternoon game, so it starts at 5:40.
Okay, then no conflict.
Yeah,
there for I'm just
go to the early service.
Sorry, pastor, couldn't make it.
Yeah, speaking of the cold weather,
yeah,
you know, 30 degrees in the South is pretty cold, but Sunday night in Mississippi is going to be 19 degrees
in North Mississippi.
North Mississippi.
Yeah, that's the same cold front that Kansas City going to
come
on down.
It's that cold. Yes. It's that Arctic blast that Canada sent us.
I know.
I got to talk to Fred about that.
Did you see, there was a news report a couple of days ago, weather related, that the Something about the Arctic was moving around or something.
Oh, the magnetic pole or something shifted. I saw the headline. I didn't get a chance
to read the
article.
Do you know enough about that to talk about it?
I don't. I didn't get to read the article. I saw the headline, and that's all I saw.
Will you do some investigative reporting
there? I will. I'll have it
tomorrow. It's either the Russians or global warming. One of the two.
It could. And, you guys, what you missed today was, I know you played the Jonathan Carl thing. Can we just play cut six, Brent, just the first part of it again?
This is all building up to the Mueller report and raising expectations of a bombshell report. And there have been expectations that have been building, of course, for over a year on this. But people who are closest to what Mueller has been doing, who have interacted with the special counsel, caution me that this report is almost certain to be anticlimactic.
Can we say that he's a climate denier if it's anticlimactic?
That's valid.
Just
that
wondering.
Was good, Steve.
Yeah.
That was good right there. But well, okay, so you're going to find out what this what's going on.
I will find out with the Earth. If I don't get lost because of the magnetic shift on the way over to the studio tomorrow, I
just
will.
Wonder what does that mean for the average person?
I'll find out for you
on the planet with the magnetic shift is doing what?
Well, I don't know. I read the headline.
Okay,
We'll have that tomorrow.
All right, what do you got? What do you got?
Boy, things
in other news.
In other news, in Washington, Republicans are censuring Representative Steve King of Iowa, who made some unfortunate comments to the New York Times. Now, there's some debate about whether or not he made the comments that he made. He hasn't really denied them. The comments that he is accused of making to the New York Times, the quote is, "White nationalists, white supremacists, Western civilization." How did that language become offensive? Well,
when I first read that, I was going, what in the world is he talking about? Is he in favor of white supremacy? Surely not. No, he's not. What you got here is, seems to me, Congressman King from Iowa has been a stalwart on conservative issues and constitutional issues and pro-family issues. So he's been a friend of ours and a friend of our friends in the movement for a long time. What I think happened here, without having talked to him, okay, is first of all, he made his mistake by doing a 1-hour interview with the New York Times. Would we agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Probably not a smart move.
No, I don't know what a conservative is doing giving the New York Times an hour. But anyway.
The failing New York Times.
The failing New York Times. Because they're not going to help you advance your cause at all. So, now if you want to give them 10 minutes, fine. If you want to answer their questions in writing, that's probably better. But what I think happened here is that Steve King was talking about immigration, and he's talking about our country's history, and he's saying that those of us, again, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, which I think he deserves here. Mm-hmm. I think he's saying
we have sound. If you want to hear,
you mean
what
he defends himself?
Words. Yep. Yeah,
okay, well, let's
hear him defend himself.
40 seconds worth of that, cut five.
Yeah.
Today, the New York Times is suggesting that I'm an advocate for white nationalism and white supremacy. I want to make one thing abundantly clear. I reject those labels and the evil ideology that they define. Further, I condemn anyone that supports this evil and bigoted ideology, which saw in its ultimate expression the systematic murder of 6 million innocent Jewish lives. It's true that, like the Founding Fathers, I am an advocate for Western civilization's values, and that I profoundly believe that America is the greatest tangible expression of these ideals the world has ever seen. Under any fair political definition, I am simply an American nationalist.
There you go. So that's okay. What he's saying.
What I think he was saying was that he got in trouble for, and the Republicans have kicked him off committees, and he's probably going to have a hard time finding somebody to eat lunch with today in the cafeteria there. But those of us who stand for the Constitution and our history and our Christian heritage, and that came from Europe, right? we're called white nationalists. We're called white supremacists. He didn't say this. He misspoke. He said it in a way that led to what's happening.
Ambiguity.
And yeah. So I think that's what happened to him. He said it. If that quote's correct, then he said it very inarticulately, and he's getting in trouble for it. And it's unfortunate because he's a good man.
Yeah.
The Republicans are having none of it. Just the news is that he's been stripped of every committee assignment that he
had. I don't know.
Yeah, and until we hear an audio recording of the interview,
right,
to put it in full, clear context, then from reading the quote from the New York Times, which Stephen King does not rebut.
Doesn't refute.
You mean Congressman King doesn't refute?
Yeah, Congressman Steve King does not refute.
It's not Steve, is it?
It is Steve.
Okay,
Congressman
I'm sorry.
Steve King does not refute the quote from the New York Times, thus the quote is accurate.
Okay.
Whether he meant it or not, I think people who know Steve King, everybody knows he's not a racist. He's not in favor of white supremacy, but the quote, he misspoke. It was a bad statement. He needed to apologize and say that he misspoke. He actually did. He sent a follow-up statement to the New York Times saying that he misspoke. So there's no way that you can somehow defend his statements. I mean, it's clearly wrong, clearly misspoke. But is he a racist? Absolutely not. And that's what the New York Times and others are trying to paint him as.
And that he's right. If he meant how I said he intended it, that when you do talk about, you know, to say America's history is rooted in European Christianity, right?
Right.
And the pilgrims and everybody who came here from Europe being what? Mostly white? 99%?
They were. Or to say that Western civilization is a great boon to society is the other thing that we hear.
That doesn't mean you're for white supremacy. You're just stating a fact of history.
Right.
My goodness. But that's the PC crowd today and these progressives, you know, you can't talk anything good about white Europeans and their influence on early American history. That's, you know, you're a bigot or a racist or a xenophobe or whatever the label they want to put on you. So anyway. All right, next story, Steve.
The latest example of Trump derangement syndrome affecting the Democrats. Uh-huh. We have a poll out that was put out by, I believe it was AP. This poll finds that before, when President Obama was president, the polls found that Democrats, by a huge majority, favored withdrawing of all troops from Afghanistan and the Middle East. They wanted to disentangle the wars that they said President Bush got us into. Well, now President Trump is in power, and he is deciding it would be good to disentangle us from all the wars we're in the Middle East. So President Bush is saying we're going to withdraw troops from...
President Bush.
President Trump is saying now that we're going to withdraw troops from Afghanistan and Syria. It turns out now... Only 26% of Democrats, or people who voted for Clinton, I should say, support withdrawing troops from Syria. 59% oppose it. So they've switched positions with President Trump. Once he is for something, they become axiomatically against it, just without thinking, reflexively.
Yeah. Yeah, this is interesting because it makes you wonder, what is the foreign policy of the Democrats? Do they have a foreign policy platform to run on? It seems like all they run on is never Trump. All they run is anti-Trump. I mean, you look in the 2018 midterms, for the most part, all the Democrats ran on is we got to stop Trump. I think that only lasts so long when you're running for the White House, which someone is going to be doing on the Democrat side next year in 2020. You have to have some kind of policy proposals other than we're here to stop Trump and always shifting and moving your positions based on whatever Trump's doing.
Yeah, the other side of that coin, I suppose, is if you can get President Trump to be for, you know, I often say if he was to say that puppies are cute, Democrats would find a way to say that they're not, you know. but if, you know, he could throw them some shade there by saying something that they completely agree with, he goes opposite his inclination, and then they'll be for what he really wants them to do. Mm-hmm. That's a complicated way of saying, you know what I'm saying. So we have a decision. Well, it's not a decision by the court, but the court, the Supreme Court of the United States, has denied an effort to stay or overturn the sentence of a man named Philip Zotaitis. Philip Zotaitis is a pro-life, pro-marriage person who helped a woman named Lisa Miller and her young daughter Isabella flee the country. This started years and years ago. And she was an ex-homosexual, Lisa Miller was in a relationship with a woman, and decided to turn away from that lifestyle. The woman demanded custody of Lisa Miller's biological daughter that they had started to raise together. This child was young at the time. Lisa Miller decided that she did not want this woman around her daughter, and there were some stories which we can't get into on the air of some allegations against this former partner. But she fled the country, and Philip Zotaitis helped her get out. Well, the court sentenced him to 36 months, 3 years in jail, and he started serving on Wednesday. There was an appeal to the Supreme Court to say, can we rethink this? And the Supreme Court said no. So he has started his sentence for helping this woman escape abuse of her daughter and custody by an ex-partner when she used to be living in the lifestyle, the homosexual lifestyle. So that's the story. It's interesting, though, because this guy is growing where he's planted. His quote is, God gave me a terrific cellmate who looks out for me and three men to disciple. We begin a prayer time every evening and we'll soon begin a Bible study. It sounds like Paul almost in jail. Guy's growing where he's planted. All right. Rod Rosenstein and
Walker's favorite person.
Yeah, I know. Back when he was with the DOJ, he started a project which is now in the process of being evaluated to make it easier to spy on reporters. So what happened is that the current...
You mean for the FBI, too?
For the FBI, too. Because of all the leaks coming out of Washington, these are illegal, and the FBI wants to find out who these leakers are. And the easiest way is to go to the reporter and say, who gave you this information? That has been protected by the First Amendment for a long time. The system says now, it says that prosecutors have to exhaust all obvious investigative methods for identifying the leaker before they go to the journalist, and then they have to require the DOJ to inform the publication that they're coming first, give them time to put together a defense. And the FBI is trying to water down those, in fact, get rid of those requirements so that they can more easily go to a reporter and find out who the source was, make them talk, basically. So it's an assault on the First Amendment as a reporter. I'm not so sure it's something that I would be in favor of, although from a conservative point with all the leaks that are going on.
As much as I don't like the leaks, I'm also not in favor of the DOJ coming after journalists, because that's what Obama did. That's what Obama did. He didn't even subpoena. He just got the phone records of some of the reporters.
Remember Rosenberg? Was that his name? Rosen? James Rosen?
Yeah, James Rosen at Fox News. So, as I mentioned, the leaks are unacceptable, especially of highly sensitive information. But the problem is the leakers, not the media outlets. So you start going after the reporters and the media outlets, that's going to be a disaster.
I don't like that either. I don't like that either because that's what they do in, communist dictatorships. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a slippery slope if you start giving the FBI the right to
go after reporters.
Go after reporters and news agencies, as much as I don't like most of them.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, next story.
Another court case of California judges. This is a federal judge in California, U.S. District Court for Northern California. It's a federal judge, has said that the feds cannot force you to unlock your iPhone with your finger or your face with biometrics. In other words, they're ruling the status quo is you can't force a person to cough up their password. Police can't beat it out of you. They can't make you give them your password. But it was now that we have all these biometrics, you can use your fingerprint, you can use your face to unlock your phone. That's a little bit less intrusive, I guess, or more intrusive, depending on your point of view, but police were kind of using that. This court has said, no, all passwords are the same. If you can't get it by forcing them to confess a number, then you can't get it by putting the phone up in front of their face or forcing their finger on the on the phone to open it up. Again, law enforcement would like to have some of these records. I mean, there's invaluable data, but a personal privacy is coming in.
Now, if you are charged with a crime, right, and your cell phone has evidence that you're either innocent or guilty, right, it seemed like to me that would be evidence that the law enforcement agency could force you to turn over.
Yes, that would be with a warrant. I think what this judge is saying here is you need a warrant.
Oh, absolutely.
But what some departments have been doing, because this area...
You're talking about police departments or sheriff's departments?
Both.
Law enforcement,
some
right?
law enforcement agencies, this is really uncharted territories since this Touch ID, this biometric and Face ID software is only a couple of years old when it comes to mass production. But what some agencies, some law enforcement agencies were doing is they were just forcing the suspect, not literally forcing, but basically convincing the suspect without getting a warrant to either enter his thumbprint or do the Face ID to unlock the device. What this judge is saying is you need a warrant. Is that right,
no,
Steve?
No, I'm reading this, but in a more significant part of the ruling, Judge Westmore declared that the government did not have the right, even with a warrant, to force suspects to incriminate themselves by unlocking their devices.
Well, plead the Fifth Amendment then, right?
Well, it's self-incrimination. It is the Fifth Amendment,
the
right?
Fifth Amendment.
And you're breaking you're forcing them to testify against themselves if you're using their data from their cell phone.
Hmm. Well, in that case, you get a lawyer, right? And you plead the Fifth Amendment. Now, that's what you do right there. But then that's what the judge is saying.
That's what the judge is saying, yes.
I'm sure there has to be processes in place where law enforcement in certain instances can search a phone, maybe if they have the software to unlock it. This sounds to me like a judge saying that law enforcement can't search somebody's home.
Well, and here's the thing. I think and Abe would be better to speak on this, but I think the way around this is, if you're accused of killing your wife, they can't make you unlock your own phone, but they can get the data off your wife's phone. So as long as it's not you're incriminating yourself, I think there's a way to get the data if you can figure out how to get
send a warrant to the service provider.
I think the law
enforcement should have access to anything
through a warrant.
But a warrant by court is...
Well, this could be a landmark, because what this says is what's on your device is the same as what's in your mind.
But you remember when you had those two terrorists kill all those people out in California about 5 years ago. You remember that? And they had was it Apple that wouldn't help them? Apple said, we're not going to unlock the phone.
Right. And this was before this ruling. This ruling might have made that moot, because even if they could make them unlock the phone, the data might not have been...
Let's ask Abe about this
tomorrow.
We should.
Yeah.
It's a good legal constitutional privacy question.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
Walker, appreciate you being on today.
Yes, sir.
And you didn't have much of a choice, but still appreciate it. And Brent Creeley ran the controls for us today. We appreciate Brent producing the program. Thanks to Sandy and Frank and Fred. We hope you have a wonderful day. Keep listening to American Family Radio, and we shall see you back here tomorrow.